Coming up next, now I'm going to talk with Craig Aston. He's senior lecturer in the Department of Plants, Soils, and Climate at Utah State University. And I wanted to transition and talk about growing your own cut flowers and what flowers do best at growing and then bringing them indoors. One of the ones that comes to my mind, since I grow them a lot, I have a lot of iris, and I like to plant dahlias, and they seem to do both of them quite well. In fact, the iris will continue to, if the buds are far enough along, they'll continue to open up into new flowers. So what's your take on this?
Yeah, that's, you know, you're right on. Those are a couple of real good ones. I kind of break them into categories. The iris is not a true bulb, but it's kind of in that bulbous family. Irises, gladiolas, actually tulips, daffodils can all do well. They're a little bit shorter lived. And so those tend to make good cut flowers. Maybe one thing we ought to characterize first is just about every flower could be put in a vase of water. But there's as much the physical properties, or I mean just even how they their shape in that, that's going to affect what works good as a cut flower. Usually you want taller flowers that have a significant stem on them, because they're short zinnias, for example, that don't make a good cut flower because the stem's just too short. But
like
the tall zinnias.
Like the profusion zinnias, yeah, are just going to, yeah. You might be able to put them in a low cup or something and have them float, but
right, yeah,
that's about it.
So that quite often is one thing that dictates what's a good cut flower, is just the size of the flower or the inflorescence. Now, that's a term that most people aren't familiar with, but there are some flowers are single flowers like a daisy. Others are an inflorescence like an iris or a glad, where there's several flowers on one floral stalk. And when you have an inflorescence, you want to cut that entire stalk, usually back down to one or two leaves. But at any rate, if you cut it properly, you do have on any of these plants that have an inflorescence, there's almost always some of the flowers open and some that will still open depending on the kind of inflorescence. And so, yeah, if they're properly handled and you maintain them like Kimberly was talking about, then they'll continue to open.
So like a gladiola would be another example. You see those at funerals quite a bit where the tops are not open yet and the ones toward the bottom are.
Mm-hmm. And usually the florists, the greenhouse growers, I should say, will harvest those as the very first ones are just starting to open. And then by the time, 2 or 3 days into shipping, a few more are starting to open. And by the time the florist is putting them in an arrangement, a few more opening. But they're really meant to mostly open, or a lot of them open after they're even put into the vase. And so that's one of the issues, too. And now this is jumping a little bit ahead, and we'll come back to some of the varieties. When you're cutting flowers that are an inflorescence, if you wait till they're fully in bloom, they're past their prime. So you want to harvest them just as maybe half the flowers have opened, and then get them into the water, and then let the rest of them open if they're maintained properly, and then you'll enjoy them for a longer period of time.
So I might, like with my iris, I might bring one in where the terminal flower at the top is open, but there's several more that are getting there but not quite, and then those are going to open up indoors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's usually just the opposite. If you look at a spike or it's called a raceme, but the long, slender inflorescence, it's the ones at the bottom that open first, and then they work their way to the top. And you'll notice that those two or three lower ones are open or partially open. That's about a good time to prune it. But having said that, there's a lot of, I mean, quite a few of the cut flowers will be an inflorescence, but a lot of them are single flowers. And snapdragons work well, zinnias, dahlias, even the marigolds, the older varieties that are taller, can work well. Status, you know, gomphrena is not thought of very often, and it's a little ball. It's globe amaranth is the name of it. It's really kind of cute.
Okay.
But sometimes it's hard to find the older varieties of gomphrena that are taller. Baby's breath is another plant that we don't normally think of using in the landscape, because floral shops will buy it and use it all the time. But you can actually buy annual baby's breath to put in your yard, and then that gives you the real pretty white flowered filler.
And it germinates pretty readily, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty easy to grow. If you try to germinate it yourself, it's a little bit longer season. You can quite often buy them as transplants, though, put them out, and by midsummer you'll have some flowers to start using in your arrangements. So, yeah, there's really most of the annuals that are upright and have a fairly significant stem can be used as cut flowers if they've got a little bit heavier stem, too. If they're real tiny stems and very soft and fleshy like an impatiens, they're not going to work as cut flowers.
Yeah. I'm also thinking if I tried to bring in some columbine, that's probably not going to last too long.
Columbine is, I don't think that's one that's going
to. Just because it's smaller stem, it seems a little more delicate.
Really, they are very short-lived, too. And that's a perennial. And in the line of perennials, there really are quite a few of the perennials that can work good. The larkspur, yarrow, there's several daisies in the daisy family that work. And then even today we have these new premium annuals, we call them, like Osteosperma or Marguerite Daisy, that you'll find the proven winner kind of things. They're beautiful, multicolored. I mean, they can be several colors.
Those, like, I think are Gerbera daisies?
Gerbera daisy is, yeah, they actually have Gerbera daisies you could grow in the landscape, which is I think is exciting. Hmm. And Gerberas make a beautiful cut. But you've got to grow them, and they need a little extra care. Yeah, yeah. They're kind of the if you love to nurture and take care of them, you can have fun with the Gerbera daisies. So yeah, there's really a lot. The other thing you could look at is actually a lot of the woody plants that are in bloom right now. Now I think we've known for a long time you can cut the inflorescence, the flower stems off of lilacs, but you could do it on forsythia. You could even do it on spirea, and just as they're coming into bloom, you can cut those woody stems and bring them in too and use them.
But the main key is don't wait until they're open outside. You want to bring them in when they're just maybe barely starting to.
Yeah, when those inflorescences are just starting to open kind of at the base, then cut them and bring them in and let them finish opening inside. And Kimberly gave some really good points about keeping those cuttings growing right. And one of the most important is just a good fresh cut.
I hadn't thought about cutting them every single day. It's like, I just want to stick them in there and then leave them alone.
Yeah, and I hadn't either, but that makes sense. But I think if you do what she said about keeping your vases clean and warm water to begin with, and if you do use some of the floral preservatives. Now, most of the floral preservatives have about three things. They have a source of sugar. They have an acidifier, and they usually have a bactericide that keeps the microorganisms down. When she talked about plugging up the veins of the xylem, it's usually microorganisms that are feeding in the water that tend to plug them up.
Not the air so much, but so that makes sense of why you would want to strip whatever you're putting into the water, make sure there's no leaves or vegetation
get all that vegetation off so it's clean, have clean vases and warm water to start with. And if you did use a floral preservative, and actually you can do you can do it on your own. If you go online, you can see some basic recipes that sometimes they'll even say using a citrus-based soft drink like Sprite or 7-Up because it's got acidifier in it, the carbonic acid, and then also the source of sugar, and then adding a half a teaspoon of bleach to it for the sterilization or to clean up the bacteria. So I've heard people say, well, let's just use soda pop or sugar. If you use those just alone without the bleach, then you quite often will start feeding microorganisms that'll plug it up even quicker. So I think Kimberly brought out a good point that if you've got clean water and clean vases to start with and it's lukewarm, that's usually all they need.
Does it make any difference if it's more of a hard water versus soft water?
You know, I think the hard water is alkaline is the big thing, and we'd like our water to be acidic. There's not enough time for the hard water to build up in the xylem by any stretch, so I think it's more the pH of the water that's going to be an issue. So a little citric acid even is probably a good idea.
This is a question from Steve McIntyre. We kind of covered it a little bit. He says, cut flowers purchased from a florist or a store usually come with a packet of powdered labeled plant food. What is this stuff? I've always assumed that in reality it is some sort of antimicrobial agent to keep germs from rotting the stems, but I never really knew.
I think almost all the professional floral preservatives do have benzoate, which is a bactericide or a freshener, I guess, and then maybe some other kind of microbial activity. So, yeah, they probably always have an acidifier, the sugar base, and then something to help control the microorganisms.
Okay. You're listening to The Zesty Garden. I have with me in studio Craig Aston, who's the senior lecturer in the Department of Plant, Soils, and Climate, and we're talking about cut flowers. And if you'd like to get in a question or a comment, we have about 6 minutes left with Craig. Our toll-free number is 1-800-826-1495. That's 800-826-1495. Or send us an email question. It's zestygarden@gmail.com. So in looking at cutting your flowers, is there a certain way to do them when you're outside? Do you take a bucket out with you and make sure they go right into water, or can you just cut them and bring them in? I'm always concerned about the air blocking the stem before I get it in the house, and then they go limp real quick.
The answer to your question, it was an either-or question, it's yes.
Okay.
Take a bucket of water, or you can cut them and bring them in, because you bring up the valid point. Once that xylem is, or that those vessels or veins are cut, they almost instantly start to seal themselves off, so they don't lose more moisture out of the stem and so on. So you could cut them and put them in water, which probably isn't a bad idea, but I think it's just as effective to cut them, collect a bundle, go in the house, and then the critical thing is to recut them either underwater, like Kimberly was saying, or get them right into water after that. And then open up that, the very base of the stem seals itself off quite quickly. And this is particularly true with those that have latex in them. Now, poinsettia is a classic example. If they have that white milky sap, that really seals it off quick. And that's even a bigger problem. There's not very many of our landscape plants that do that. But yeah, so yeah, if you had a bucket of water, cut them, put them right in. But even then, once you get in there and you start arranging them, it's probably good to make an additional cut. So you could just wait till you're got them all collected and cut them all at one time, get them into a clean vase with warm water, just like we've talked about. The other thing that's probably a bit of a consideration is the vigor of the plant when you're making the cutting. In a greenhouse, they'll almost always harvest their cut flowers in the afternoon. That's so that the sun, they will have had the better part of a day to produce as much sugar as possible to have stored in that stem and flower. So that's kind of a give and take, because you don't want to cut them when it's real warm and they're stressed from the heat. But in a greenhouse, they usually keep the greenhouses cool so they can do it. If it's in your yard, you may want to wait till late afternoon or evening after they've had the full day of sunlight, and then it's cooled down again in the evening. If you're not going to do it then just do it in the morning. The worst time to do it is in the heat of the day if it's hot. And then it's also not good to cut flowers if their plants are dry. If you're irrigating every 3 or 4 days and the sprinklers haven't been on and their plants are dry and they're a little stressed, that's not a good time to take your cuts either. So
makes sense doing that, because I know when I'm picking vegetables, I either want to do it first thing in the morning or wait until the evening hours, unless, of course, they're root vegetables, and it doesn't make a whole lot of difference. But still, those ends of the day are the best times
right
to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, avoid the heat of the day. And then if there was a choice between morning and evening, maybe evening's a little better, because cut flowers last longer when they have lots of carbohydrates stored in the stem before they're cut. And they're going to be at their peak at the end of the day versus in the morning when they've been utilizing some of those sugars all night long. So,
are there some flowers that hold their form, their shape, or their color better than others? Another one thing about iris, I mean, they look lovely, but boy, when they go limp, you know right away, they just fold up and look bad, and then at that point, I just break them off. But
you know, I think that's a structure more of the anatomy of the plant. So you take an iris with a great big, soft, very delicate petal, it's going to be more susceptible to stress, to collapse, and when it does, it loses some of its aesthetics. I think some of the pigmentation diminishes and so on. So the flowers that are more mass or smaller or thicker petals and maybe you'd say not so delicate probably will hold up better. But I don't know across the board if we could quantify that that way all the time anyway.
So when you're thinking of planting roses, and this is the question I'll end with, are all hybrid teas always the best ones to go with, or is it the matter of preference?
No, I think any rose will work from a physiological standpoint as a cut flower just fine, but a hybrid tea is going to have a bigger, perhaps more showy than, say, a rose or flower than a hedge rose or something else. And then the other thing with the rose, you like a pretty good stem. And roses particularly, it's important, and just about any flower, when you're cutting it back, you want to go back even to the second leaf that's the best place to cut it, because then you'll have a fuller plant and better flowers on the second picking. Don't cut them up close. Cut a fairly long stem.
And my last question for you is, what flowers would you avoid bringing in? Now, some people find lilacs great outside, but once you bring them inside, they just way too much in the odor category.
That could be a good point. When it comes to the aroma, some of these are very powerful, and to some people, they're pungent. I don't mind lilacs. You know, I think one of the challenges—
And you get used to it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Easter lilies are very, very powerful, too, but I love the aroma. But I've heard of some ladies saying, oh, that's just too powerful, too much. So I think that's more a personal preference thing.
Okay. Well, Craig, thank you very much for coming in.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to The Zesty Garden. Craig Aston is senior lecturer in the Department of Plant, Soils, and Climate at Utah State University. We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll come back with the gardening calendar before we move on to our new segment, The Green Room. So stay tuned.